This is Jonathan Goldstein from Heavyweight. If your finance team spends more time finding data than using it, if there's one entity here and one here and one here and one here, if scaling your business feels like starting over, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite is the AI-native ERP solution that's powerful, painless, and proven. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
Mylo's Pro Rewards members, save big during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Get your member volume discount plus an extra 5% off eligible orders with a quote of $2,000 or more. And buy more and save more with up to 20% off in-stock molding when you spend $250 or more. Members get more at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Can't be combined with any contract or special pricing. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit the Pro Desk or Lowe's.com/terms for more details. Subject to change.
If 10% of the evangelical base decides we might have got tricked by the devil, great.
I'm into it. Awesome. Love it.
And it could be right, by the way. He could be demon possessed. I'm not ruling it out.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. A little bit of shameless self-promotion. The Webby Awards voting
JVL,
is closing.
You have to stop.
And
He tried to make me set up a burner email.
I can't make
to vote
you do anything
him.
You don't want to do.
You are but blowing some have everybody else emails. Out of the field. It's not even close. Okay.
Why did you not ask one of the nerds at the office just to create you a bot army to do this? If it's that
because that would not be authentic, and I only
authentic?
Want to win authentically. Yes, it is. Asking my
you asked me to set up a burner
there.
Account.
JVL has a positive. I just asked if you happen to have, say, spare email accounts set aside for your children that you could log in, which would be because your children would vote for me if they knew that the Webby existed and they had access to the internet. So I don't think that would be an authentic.
Yeah, if they were seven.
My lead over second place is only 61 points right now. And that is unacceptable. It could go away in a heartbeat, and we need to lock this thing down.
Is the second place newsletter that like Canadian Energy Report?
It is. And it's a very fine newsletter.
Yeah.
I love their product. I think it's great. But guys, I want this.
I'm going to set up a bot army to go vote against you. I'm going to set up a bot army we're going to swarm you. Yes, I will.
Don't you do that.
I'm going to get all Hassan Piker's people against you.
That should be doable.
All right. Also, very quickly, tickets are going on sale this week for the California Bulwark Live Tour. I will not be there, but it will be a fantastic show. All the same, they're going to be in San Diego on May 20th, LA on May 21st. The pre-sale for subscribers starts today, and then general pop tickets go on sale Friday. So get in now, thebulwark.com/events. That's thebulwark.com/events. Don't sleep on these tickets the way some people did in Minnesota, because they will go fast.
We're not adding second shows this time.
No.
So go get them.
So J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are tag-teaming the Pope.
JVL.
Phrasing.
Is that teabagging the Pope? That's, is that the better? King. No.
Okay. It could be called Eiffel Towering.
You've lost me. Is that what does that mean? I don't know.
You just kind of like, imagine it in your head.
Is that like Bukele?
It's kind of like the Triangle of
the
Doom.
The Triangle of Doom. So I will say it is funny to me that the guy who is a Catholic convert who has written a memoir about his conversion story and his lifelong love of Catholicism is now a couple weeks before that book drops saying, you know, the Holy Father should just stay in his own lane.
Shut up, dude. Stick to Jesus, Leo.
So okay. The guy who has a church that isn't Catholic that he's never been to on the cover of his book about converting to Catholicism then says before the book drops that the Pope should shut his fucking pie hole. Sure. Why not?
He said in some cases it would be best for the Vatican to stick to matters of morality. And I was like, that's so interesting because it feels like, A, these are matters
is
of morality.
Bombing people, murdering people, not a matter of morality?
And also, I mean, if J.D. Vance wants the Pope to start weighing in on Donald Trump's issues around morality, I think there's a lot of content.
Does he mean like adultery or bearing false witness or covetousness or theft? Is that the sort of thing he thinks the Pope should weigh in on vis-a-vis the American president?
I know the listeners are going to get sick of all the cradle Catholic talk on the, with me and JVL and Jane Costin on Friday at this point. But like, again, that's also just not something that a Catholic would say. Like that the idea that the Pope's remit should be limited to morality. Like it is, it's a very, you know, kind of axe type mindset towards what the role would be of a spiritual leader. You know, the pontiff's remit is quite a bit wider, a wider berth, I would say.
I have a theory on this.
Please.
It's that J.D. Vance is not an authentic spiritual person. Oh. And neither is Donald Trump.
Okay.
I don't know if that's too far out on a limb for you guys, but yeah. I think that maybe these guys don't mean it.
Don't you think he should try to convert his wife before he writes a book for converting everybody else? That's just something to think about. I mean, the kids aren't even really going to church. What is he doing? It's the fakest shit I've ever seen in my entire life. And, you know, you'd think that he could at least pretend to like the first American pope if he's going to do a book on his Catholic rollout. At least pretend to like him.
They have to do this because the first American Catholic pope doesn't like them. And he's being sort of clear on it.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't like J.D. Vance. And he's figured out how to manage that throughout his whole life. I mean, he was pretty unlikable in high school. He was unlikable at Yale. His whole book was about that, how offended he was, that everybody was mean to him. His parents didn't really like him. Like, he's not well-liked, and so he's figured out how to navigate that in other settings. And so I don't know about in this setting how he wouldn't just...
Tremendously bad luck that J.D. Vance is always surrounded by assholes everywhere he goes.
Yes, I know, but it's just like, you know, one thing you consider saying is, I've got nothing but respect for the Pope. You know, we're going to appreciate and consider his guidance. You know, the Holy Father is very important to me as a leader of the church. You know, Donald Trump has to do what's best for the nation, right? Like, you could just do that. Also, you don't have
this
to.
This is what happens all the time.
This is how Riley Gaines, you know, responded to Trump when he, after she said that perhaps he should not post pictures of himself as Jesus, he responded with, I've never liked Riley Gaines, which, you know.
And what was her response to that, Sarah?
Her response was, I hope to be in heaven with Donald Trump because he's a wonderful man. I just disagree with him on this point. But, you know, and I was like, that surrender. Is so embarrassing for you.
What she begged like a dog.
What vision of heaven has Donald Trump in it? I mean, honestly.
I think we saw it. It's the one with that weird four-armed demigorgon with the no head and the spikes sticking out of it.
Maybe it's kind of my version of heaven. Maybe you die and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in this place. It's like Treasure Island. In the Pinocchio movie, everybody's partying, people are having sex. You're like, Donald Trump's over there.
Is that
you're
the
like,
Pinocchio movie?
You're like, shit, I'm in heaven. Well, no, they weren't having sex, but you know, the kids were smoking cigars. You know, the kids were drinking.
I remember this scene.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And maybe it's like that. You think you're in heaven. It's like a good place situation. You think that you're in heaven. Donald Trump's there, and then you come to find out, actually, no. No,
bad you're place. There.
You're in the bad place.
I will tell you, if I wind up anywhere and see Donald Trump there, I will know immediately I'm in hell. Even if it's not actual hell, it will certainly be my hell.
Yeah. All right. So for people who are under the age of like 60, who don't have much of a memory of the papacy pre-John Paul II, being against wars is kind of the single biggest constant in popery. This is John Paul II, John Paul the Great, who is on the conservative Mount Rushmore. It's Maggie Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, JP, and I don't know who the fourth one would be. Who would the fourth one be?
Donald Trump.
Okay. Probably. He was against both Iraq I and Iraq II. Right. I mean, the invasion, Iraq invaded Kuwait, and the Pope was like, guys, war's not the answer. We don't need to do this. this is just how. But Trump turns it into, look at this Pope, this DEI woke Pope who has TDS. And it took, can you believe that they're against my war because they hate me so much?
The popes don't match cleanly across American politics, partisan lines. You know, I mean, the popes have condemned abortion before, and I don't recall Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden saying, shut your pie hole, Pope Benedict. stick to pontificating. Like, what? So you can just ignore. You can just say, I appreciate the feedback.
But here's the thing that really gets me. So this administration has gone out of its way to denigrate any idea that there should be limits on war or that such thing as proper conduct in war exists. It views things like limiting civilian casualties to be woke and DEI. This is an administration which literally changed the name of the Department of Defense to Department of War to celebrate the idea of we're not using military to defend ourselves and our values. We're in war. We do war here.
The war fighters.
We're war fighters.
Yeah.
This is an administration which has pardoned war criminals, which has been putting out all of this like snuff porn videos where they liken the killing of Iranians to cutscenes from video games, where the president threatens genocide. And then when the Holy Father says, this stuff seems pretty bad. This does not look like just war theory. They're like, what is he talking about? How dare he? And it's like you take them seriously and they're very offended.
You know, I don't want every piece of analysis to be like, Trump is working on a distraction. Because I don't know that it's just that. I actually think part of it is like they are under siege and they are being abandoned. This is why Trump's little Jesus AI foray couldn't have been more ill-timed. But part of what was interesting to me about the kerfuffle on the AI is how many Christians on the right who are normally Trump sycophants jumped on him. Them jumping on him is a sign of Trump's declining power. He is having trouble keeping people on side the way that he is used to keeping them on side. And so he's lashing out.
He's lashing out. He's on tilt. JBL wrote it yesterday. He's on tilt. And this is what Trump does. And in the past, it has worked because people get back in line. You know, particularly if you're a politician, they get back in line because the voters want them to. If you're a media figure, you get back in line because your viewers or listeners want you to, if you're a MAGA media celebrity. And it just, like, the more that Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly, this is why their stuff matters, just as far as what the incentive structure is concerned, the more they step out and don't see their ratings go down, but opposite, in fact. Like right now, it's Ben Shapiro whose ratings are going down, and Tucker's that are staying the same are going up, whatever you bet, for better or worse. And so, that, you know, people are starting to see that they don't have to cower totally. I mean, some of them are going to still. I mean, Riley Gaines, like, you know, said that she's going to go to heaven with Trump and all this. You know, again, it's not a total flip, but you can start to see it changing for sure.
So this is a real question for you guys. Yeah. Was there really a backlash? Because I saw very little of it. Not that I was especially looking. What I saw was like Bishop Robert Barron, who is Trump's favorite bishop, put out the most like pained, oh, this is regrettable. I serve on Donald Trump's religion. He's such a great president. Oh, he's so, this is unfortunate. I think he should apologize. You know, like it sure didn't look to me like it looked like it was performative half condemnation.
I have some feedback for you on this. That was my initial instinct as well. And so I want to provide a couple of anecdotes.
Please.
It's just anecdotes. This is a fellow, Joel Webbin. He's a husband, father, and pastor. He's also a podcaster. His post was this: I genuinely believe Trump is currently demon possessed. This is interesting. It's an interesting data point because
it's getting bad advice.
Tucker is also right. Exactly. Tucker is also kind of suggested he was demon possessed and then kind of suggested that he was controlled by the Jews. But it both the thing that connects them
is
not the Jews or demons. The thing that connects them is that like isn't Trump doesn't have agency, right? That it must be some other outside force, whether it be the devil, you know, or Israel. But then just bring it to normies. It's just one anecdote. I did mention it on the Daily Podcast today, but it's too good not to mention again. I landed home from vacation last night. I was very tired. I got into the bed. received a text from one of my friends right before I put on Do Not Disturb. And I looked at it and I was like, this is a nice way to end vacation. It was a text from a screenshot of a text from his mother-in-law to him where she posted the Trump is Jesus thing. And she said to him, Trump has crossed the line, exclamation point. He might be the Antichrist. This is a woman that is a three-time Trump voter that always fought with my friend, her son-in-law, about this. He was the lib in her life that they would text fight over. Again, just an anecdote, but I'm just saying it's like two, it. Three is a trend. The fact that he could either be demon-possessed or the Antichrist, if that's what it takes for some percentage, I'm not saying everybody, but like if 10% of the evangelical base decides we might have got tricked by the devil. I'm great.
I'm into awesome. It. Awesome. Love it.
And it could be right, by the way. He could be demon possessed. I'm not ruling it out.
Yeah. He also just could be decompensating quickly. I will say JVL and I are doing focus group pod together. And we've got two groups of Catholics we are convening to hear what they think. And so it'll be interesting to see like how much this did penetrate and if it impacted things. I do want to say that
conservative Catholics or like Trump Catholics?
That's one a good question.
I think you're doing one. It's happening this afternoon. I believe it's one conservative, one lib.
Yeah. My team is doing it. So, but that would make sense. We would normally, if we're doing two groups, it's probably Catholics who voted for Kamala and Catholics who voted for Trump. It'll be interesting to see what the Trump voting Catholics say about it. But this is where you end up with, this is what I mean by when you talk about under siege, what that means is like when things get cumulative. And I think that you have Trump fighting an unpopular war, the economy in shambles, oil prices high, and, you know, he's doing a million things that people are upset about all at once. And then he's like, and I'm Jesus. And it's just the thing that makes people go, right now I am not feeling like you're Jesus. I really think you're not Jesus. I hate this. Oh, and then, I mean, the explanation was beautiful. This idea of Trump saying, I didn't know that was Jesus. I was just trying to, I was a doctor. That's me depicting myself as a doctor. And I don't know about you guys, but if my doctor showed up in a white tunic with a red sash and a ball of light in her hand, I would say, am I dying? Like, is this the end for me? What is going on?
Should I walk toward the light?
Yeah. It also kind of betrays, you know, the options for him are either, the obvious thing that we all know, I've been a total fraud who does not care at all about the religion, and I've just been pretending, which I think some evangelicals are kind of on board with that deal, you know, or I've come to believe that I'm actually Jesus himself. And I guess one is slightly better from the other, but not great.
Either way, I've got a really good idea about what he can do with J.D. Vance. We'll get to that in a minute. First, Sarah, we got to have a word from our sponsor.
Like a lot of families, our nighttime routine revolves around getting everyone settled and ready for the next day. And it's brutal to do that, as anyone with kids knows. But once the kids are asleep, that quiet moment to rest and recharge really matters to me. That is why I can't wait to level up my mattress situation with a new mattress from Leesa. I want to fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and wake up feeling like actually, truly rested, which is very seldom that happens. When the most powerful people in the world are making news and posting crazy things online before most of us are even getting settled for breakfast, I need to be at the top of my game because I got to tweet fight at people. Why am I so pumped about Leesa? They are made of premium materials that deliver serious comfort and full body support no matter how you sleep. Just take the Leesa sleep quiz and you'll find your perfect match in less than 2 minutes. Leesa mattresses are meticulously designed and assembled in the USA for exceptional quality, and they back it up with free shipping, easy returns, and a 120-night sleep trial. Leesa has been awarded Best Hybrid and Best Memory Foam Mattresses by New York Times Wirecutter and is featured by West Elm as their go-to mattress partner. Go to Leesa.com for 20% off select mattresses, plus get an extra 50% off with promo code THENEXTLEVEL, exclusive for our listeners. That's Leesa.com, promo code THENEXTLEVEL for 20% off select mattresses, plus an extra $50 off. Support our show and let them know we sent you after checkout.
So our friend Nick Taggio wrote a fantastic, fantastic column about J.D. Vance and the Pope stuff. And his suggestion It was one of the rare ones. I read it. And I was like jealous. I was like, oh, I wish I'd written this.
This is big of you. You do deserve that Webby. To be able to be admit Thank that you are jealous of another person's writing shows such growth that it means that this should be the moment in your career for this kind of recognition, I think.
Because God knows if I get the recognition, I'll really show so much growth. Anyway, he said Trump should just actually create a splinter to the Catholic Church and make J.D. the anti-pope. Have J.D. be the anti-pope of the Trump Orthodox version of the Catholic Church. It solves like a whole bunch of problems all at once. It probably does create a small schism in American Catholicism. There would be Catholics who would follow him. It gets J.D. out of the way. J.D. gets to do something that he's probably better suited for. It frees up room to being move Marco pope. Into the VP. Yeah.
He's better suited for being the fake pope than for being the vice
president.
He's
better at that than he is at this.
I don't know about that, but okay, sure.
And it was just, I loved that idea, especially coming off of what we've just seen with JD and his weekend, where he went to Hungary and failed to even help Viktor Orban. He seems to have hurt him a little bit, at least. Was sent off to Pakistan to negotiate a ceasefire. In fact, the ceasefire is now over. So this isn't just he didn't get the deal done. It's that like the ceasefire we had has fallen apart. Not great. So I don't know if you guys had thoughts about JD or the blockade, because I feel like the blockade is underappreciated, because the naval blockade, which resulted from JD's failed negotiations, is an act of war, which means that the ceasefire is over.
Well, kind of. We let a Chinese ship go through. A sanctioned Chinese ship has gone through the blockade so far. So it's kind of an act. It's a maybe act of war, depending. It's Trump wants you to think that he might want to do a war, but I don't. He's not really ready for a big boy war yet, which is good, by the way. Not complaining about that, but just saying. I'm really stuck on JD as fake pope. I don't think that would work, I guess I would say. I don't think that he's got the... I don't know what kind of riz Martin Luther had, for example, but it had to be more than JD's, I would say. So I think that's probably a no.
I bet he could reconvert Rod Dreher.
And I'm also pretty skeptical. There's, you know, Michael Weiss was on the show today, and he, you know, there is this kind of in the talking head class, this Marco momentum that JD can be pushed to decide in favor of Marco. Everybody knows Marco's deal. Okay. And so it's like not surprising that the people who didn't really like the isolationist Trump are like pushing Marco as the real successor, because they got on board with Trump hoping he would do what he turned out to be doing, which is warmongering Trump. And but the voters also know that. And the media members that, you know, MAGA folks listen to also know that. And the Iran war, I still am just going to continue to repeat my point, is like way worse than people think. Not in the deaths area, but like the economic impact. And we just saw the price of beef is going, the price of everything is going up. It's going to take a little bit to trickle through the whole economy. Like it's not there yet, but every day we add on the fucking blockade is another day delay of fixing the supply chains. And we're going to get into the fall and be in an economic, in a really painful economic situation. And then the rats are really going to be jumping off the ship. And I don't think they're going to be jumping on to boat Marco.
So I have pushback on this. I have some pushback on this. I don't know if you must not have been listening to the Focus Group podcast, because I will tell you, I did an
Coachella
episode.
No, I did not.
No, not just Coachella. It might have been a couple episodes ago. But we did a piece on the strange new respect for Marco Rubio coming from voters. And I think that it is, I've got a couple theories on this. One is people really don't like J.D. Vance. They still think he's the most likely nominee, but people are starting to say, oh no, Marco Rubio is really impressing me. And I actually think it has a lot to do with the meme of Marco getting every job. I think there is a weird psychological thing happening where this idea that Marco Rubio is the singular person in this administration who is not an absolute screw up, who's not like a psychopath, or whatever, is leading a lot of people to say, well, he seems better. He seems like the one who knows what he's doing, number one. Number two, I have long held the theory that people who were popular in the pre-Trump era that we speculated would likely one day be president, like Nikki Haley, like Marco Rubio, that they're all dead to the MAGA base. And I'm not letting that go precisely. I do think, though, especially among younger voters who didn't encounter pre-Trump Marco Rubio, they're encountering him for the first time as a MAGA establishment figure and find him fine, right? And like less noxious than J.D. Vance, like a more serious person. And so I've got my eye on that as a phenomenon. And so I don't think it's preposterous, because I am starting to hear it in the focus groups quite a bit.
I agree with your assessment of the current situation. My pushback to the pushback is premised on the idea that they're going to lose control of the rope on the Iran war situation,
yeah,
and like the economic fallout from it. And I just can't imagine a situation where that takes down JD and not Marco. Like that doesn't compute to me. Maybe that could happen, but, and either the situation is so bad that we end up in a Bush situation where the Trump family isn't even invited to the next convention and somebody else comes forward, probably from even a kookier wing, like, or we end up in a situation where like JD is their apparent. I think it's tough to see the Marco for me, like how he games his way through that. But maybe, I don't know, long way away.
I'm not saying he's definitely going to be the person. I'm just saying I do think people are giving him like a new look.
Yeah, sure.
And I partly, I also think that's in the absence of a, like there's a vacuum being created in right. post-Trump. And I we don't know where all of this is heading. The one thing when we started talking about this a month ago or 6 weeks ago, however long ago it was that this war started, one of the outstanding questions about whether or not this was going to matter, how much it was going to matter, it really was our answer to that was it depends on how long it goes on, right? That the public's tolerance mm-hmm. for it was going to be, it depends on how long it goes on, because that's the difference between people thinking you went to war versus you bombed something, right? Because if you just bomb something and nothing happens, the public, the memory on that fades really quickly. I don't think there's any way now in 2026 or even going into 2028 that people will forget that we did this war, right? Like they will be able to run against it and talk about the broken promises and hanging around JD's neck. And so I do think it matters in that regard.
I will never bet against the capacity of the median American to forget something that happened 5 minutes ago. I'm not saying they will definitely remember it I'm just saying that it's possible. These people can forget anything.
I believe that. But I also believe Democrats will make hay with it. Like this will be a big piece of pushback from them.
Maybe. I am interested in the Trump administration's flip-flop on the ceasefire. And I wanted to just unpack this a little bit with you guys. So we got our ceasefire. It was basically everything Iran had wanted. And JD shows up. And what it seems to be is that Trump has decided he wanted to renegotiate. Like he just thought this was like making a deal with the local pipe fitters and that, you know, he could sign a contract. Then when it came time to pay them, he could just tell them, well, we have to renegotiate. What are you going to do? Because what JD and company seem to have proposed was that Iran would undertake a 20-year-long suspension of nuclear activity. And the Iranians said, fuck you. Why do you think Trump would have done that? Why not just, you've already taken the loss. You've already had everybody say that you surrendered, right? Like, why now try to unsurrender and drag it out?
I don't think there was ever a deal, is the answer to that question.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
think that there was a deal and a change. There was never really a deal. Trump bluffed. He didn't actually want to end the Iranian civilization. And the Iranians went, so then when the next day asks his friends in Pakistan, please post this saying that the Iranians are begging for a ceasefire so I can get the ceasefire that I need. And the Pakistanis did that. And then Trump is like, great, happy to do it. And then I think the Iranians are like, okay, well, if you're going to stop bombing us for a little while, all the straits still closed, that's fine. We'll kind of see how this goes. Maybe we'll get some cash out of the deal. And that was it. And like, I think that the negotiations were basically square one. I mean, not exactly. And obviously there were back channels happening and there were texting and all this, but like, I don't, I don't, it doesn't seem to me, it didn't never really seem to me like there was a deal. There were multiple 10 points going around. There's never an official real statement about which one it was. There's complaints from Trump about the ones that it wasn't true. Israel's bombing Lebanon within 2 hours. Initially, I think we were on last week whenever that happened.
Yeah.
The thinking was like maybe that was kind of this last, like we're going to get a couple in before the ceasefire actually happens. But now it kind of seems like, no, they didn't actually even negotiate over Lebanon. There was never an agreement about that. So I think that's what happened. And then then Trump lives day by day. And then, you know, it's like I live to survive another day. And then it's like, okay, today the thing to do is the blockade. That's basically what I assess to have happened.
I think that's exactly right. And one of the ways you can tell that that's right is that all of the new information we get is either right before the market opens. Like it is always meant to calm internal pressures. Is you get a little drip out of information that lets people feel like, oh no, it's going to be okay. Only then to later see like actually nothing has changed.
Yeah. That sounds about right. So where do we think this week, as of today, where we have a blockade, which by the way, before I ask you where we think this is going next, if America is undertaking a naval blockade, which is by definition of act of war, doesn't the president have to go to Congress to get an authorization to go to war?
We are coming up on that, the authorization of war time. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Is that something Democrats should talk about or no?
It is something, yes, it is something Democrats should talk about. I think that there have been some good Democrats in this. There's one of them I want to talk about at the end. But I do think more is more. You know, and again, this is all premised on my assessment that this is going to get a lot worse economically. And so you want to be out there gaining credibility now. So I do think that the Democrats should do more. The another reason why there should be more just clear opposition to this and calling for him to stop is that we don't have objectives anymore. Like there's no point. Like when you ask like what is going to happen this week, it's not going to be based on like what the Iranians offer. It's like, it sort of is, but only in the meta sense. It's like Trump on the one hand, like wants it to stop so he can declare victory and get the economy back going. And then whatever, it's like, maybe we'll bomb him again next year. You know, like that's, you can tell that's what he kind of wants. On the other hand, he also wants people to praise him. And, you know, if he feels like he needs to go in there to get more praise, maybe we'll do another thing. And related to that hand, he doesn't want people critiquing him because he doesn't want a deal. People could say this is worse than Obama's deal. He's very concerned about that. Right.
Yes.
And so it's like whether or not this escalates in 8 days or they come up with some temporary deal is like just truly based on the psychology of Donald Trump. And the fact that he doesn't want like a worse deal with Obama, like that, it's not based on. I mean, they're going to say it's based on the number of years of the enrichment or whatever, but like, it's not what it's based. He doesn't care about that.
That is why he can't take the 3 to 5 year deal being put forward by the Iranians, is because that would be a worse deal than Obama by a real stretch.
And so it does put him in a rock and a hard place. And I think that the only way out is to take a worse deal than the Obama deal and pretend it's a better one, which he's done before. NAFTA was basically that. But the idea that getting out of this without Iran either getting sanctions relief or revenue from the Strait or an ability to nuclear enrich, I don't see how. I think some of those things have to be on the table, right?
Yeah, all of them.
Often, probably.
All right. This episode is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Unlike many store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less with no thawing required. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable. In addition to their variety box, they have a gluten-free box, a vegan box, and a new protein box. You can go crazy with how you want to customize your box. You can load it up with croissants and things for delicious breakfasts, but then also stock up on after-dinner dessert options like delicious cookies. It's all there for you. In fact, I was on another podcast recently, and the host and I were talking in the green room, and she told me that on my recommendation, she went and subscribed to Wild Grain, and she loves it. Because it's so good. Imagine having fresh bakery quality bread, pastries, and pasta at home without any trips to the store. And don't just take my word for it. They have over 40,000 five-star reviews and have been voted the best food subscription box by USA Today for 3 years now. For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box plus free croissants for life. When you go to wildgrain.com/thenextlevel to start your subscription today, that's $30 off your first box and free croissants for life when you visit wildgrain.com/thenextlevel, or you can use promo code thenextlevel at checkout. Okay. Can we talk about Hungary? I know nobody cares about foreign policy, but the three of us haven't had
a chance
to talk
about
Hungary.
People care about Hungary, just not everybody.
And right before we came on, I read Rod Dreher's 4,000, 5,000 word post about his reaction to the loss by his political patron.
Should you tell people who Rod Dreher are? I know that it's kind of
he
like...
keeps doing this.
The next level listeners I know are here for us doing burn book stuff on like random figures from the, you know, cinematic Republican online commentator universe. But I do think you should probably tell people who Rod Dreher.
So Rod Dreher was a writer at National Review who broke with National Review. He became a Catholic, I think, and then left the Catholic Church for the Orthodox Church. Yep. He moved to Louisiana, Mississippi, someplace deep down south, and wrote a whole book about how important it was to be there with his family and how real men take care of their family. And the Benedict option was just retreating from the world with your family. And then he left his family and moved to Hungary and started posting a lot of really interesting photos of himself and other people.
Other men. Didn't really like the gays very much. Very anti-gay. Should just say that.
Did not like the gays.
Very anti-gay. And Budapest does have a great sauna scene. Have been there. Really nice.
There is so much going on in this conversation I don't understand.
Anyway, he has been an Orban. He was, I want to say, Rob might have been like patient zero in the American conservatism turn towards Orbanism. And he has a gig at one of the Orban-run think tanks.
He hasn't. The Magyar is going to stop funding all that shit. CPAC was getting Hungerman. I'm going to continue. We'll get back to that.
Anyway, so Rod wrote a long post about the results of the election in which he spoke to a large number of ordinary Hungarians about their thoughts about the loss. Weirdly, every single person he spoke to voted for Orban in an election which Orban lost 2-1. I mean, I'm sure that's just a random sample. Could have happened anywhere. And he says that it's really, you know, honestly, Orban probably would have won if there wasn't this stupid pedophilia scandal. I mean, it's all local stuff. And there was corruption. And Orban really should have done a better job in telling the children of Hungarian oligarchs not to post on Instagram like pictures of themselves in Dubai on vacation, and that this is what cost them the election. How the prime minister of Hungary was supposed to stop individual Hungarians from posting on social media, unclear. Anyway, but Rod seems not really.
If he didn't do the corruption, there wouldn't be pictures of all the corruption. Yeah.
That's not what Rod was saying. Very important to say. Rod's piece does not say that Orban shouldn't have done the corruption. He says the corruption is just endemic everywhere in Europe. And what he should have done was stop the oligarchs and their children from rubbing normal Hungarians' faces in it.
Okay.
Very, very important distinction. And that basically Orbanism won and it's coming to the rest of Europe. And the Atlanticists, which is a pejorative, weirdly enough.
Is that like is that us? What is the Atlanticists?
People who value the North Atlantic treaties and relationships between liberal democratic countries against communist and authoritarian countries. Yeah. Those people, they're losing, and they're about to see just how badly they're losing. It was a very brave, stiff upper lip sort of thing. And Rod says he's prepared to just move to Austria and live off of his Substack and his book royalties.
What's happening in Austria?
I'm unclear. I did think to myself, is there
bathhouses?
They have bathhouses in Austria too?
Yeah.
Why not Moscow? Why not Moscow? Yeah. Do you guys have thoughts about the, because, so Tim, you talked a little bit with Bill. Sarah talked a little bit with Bill also. I was like weirdly buoyed by the election.
Same.
No, it was great. It was the only news I allowed myself while on vacation. I was super happy about it. I got some feelings seeing the, you know, viral post of the gays kissing in Budapest, you know, outside the celebration. I listened to the We Are the Champions, which is just awesome, unbelievable soft power for the Anglosphere that, you know, after overthrowing an autocrat in Hungary.
They play Queen.
They play Queen.
Rod Dreher sitting there going, I was right.
Right. So that that's wonderful. You know, and I think that it's a country. I think that it should give resolve to everybody else who sometimes is, you know, people, I don't know, maybe on this podcast or off this podcast, who at times can be fatalist about the direction of the world.
He's in the room with you, JBL. Yeah. He's in the room.
I think that there can be a lesson there that these things can be pushed back against. You know, we'll see how the new guy does, but I thought it was wonderful. The fact that Magyar like goes in, he's doing his first interview with public television there. They blocked him from doing interviews. Yeah. Doing that today, I think. In the first press conference, he mentions how they're going to stop funding the political efforts of the Fidesz party, and he mentions both CPAC and that college that J.D. Vance had the, you know, it must be like the University of Texas of Hungary, where J.D. Vance did the interview.
University of Austin.
The University of Austin. Sorry, horns down, but the University of Austin is what I meant there. So that's great. But I just think it's worth sitting on the CPAC thing for a second. I mean, the Hungarian taxpayer, your average working Hungarian was subsidizing an American sex pest that runs a like far right American what would you even call it? You know, political organization.
Yeah, but not a straight sex pest.
Host events. Yeah. Gay sex pest. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Multiple times, allegedly. And like the taxpayers in Hungary are funding him? Like, who else was getting money from them? And think about this. Maybe that's part of the reason why J.D. Vance went over there. Not just because he liked Orban, because he wanted him to win, but because they were a funding source for all of J.D.'s friends. I mean, like, the idea that the Hungarian taxpayer was doing that is insane.
How about the idea that the American taxpayer paid for J.D. Vance to go over there and stump for this guy who was losing?
Yeah, that's true.
It also is incredible.
Like problems.
Awesome.
But this is one of the reasons why Orban's resounding defeat is so positive for us, is that because Donald Trump and MAGA has intertwined themselves with Orbanism. Orbanism was a playbook that we were following, and so to see it defeated does have implications. And I mean, I don't know whether it was monetary. I don't know if there are monetary reasons why J.D. Vance went over there for himself, but certainly the idea that a bunch of people who are in his world have been propped up by this guy and were about to lose their livelihoods, and so they tried to call him in as a reinforcement as they started to see how bad it was going to get for them, seems pretty likely. Like, it's crazy that he went over there. I couldn't have been happier to see Orban go down by so much, and I think it matters more than people think for the United States, both because it has sort of big implications for whether or not illiberals are starting to be toppled in places by their people. Like, that has got to have Trump feeling nervous. But I do want to just bait JVL for 1 second with Ross Douthat, who wrote an insane column in the New York Times suggesting that the fact that Petar Magyar won in Hungary is evidence that they weren't illiberal to begin with, because if you have an illiberal country, how could you possibly have an election, a blowout election like this? And this is an astounding level of cope and also sort of a prequel to them all trying to figure out how to kind of move the idea that Trump did not create an illiberal situation in this country. And I just want to make one point, because this is, I think, is important. This idea that being illiberal or liberal is like a light switch that you switch on and off is very silly. It's like you either move closer to it or further away from it. And I think that Orban had moved Hungary like extraordinarily far in the illiberal direction. He had packed the courts and gotten rid of his political enemies. He had shut down the press. He had bribed everybody. He was notoriously corrupt. He managed to stay there for 16 years by manipulating all kinds of things and paying people out and not letting people have access to media. Donald Trump is also waging war on the media. He is currently suing. He just lost to the Wall Street Journal, but he has been trying to sue every media outlet that says anything bad for him because he wants to chill civic spaces. They did a doge over in Hungary when Orban first came in to get rid of all the people who were in the institutions who could hold him accountable. Trump demonizes the media, tries to own the media, buy the media. Like, there's a million ways in which Trump is not, he doesn't have to be exactly like it to be moving America very steadfastly into an illiberal direction. And I just thought that was a really preposterous piece by Mr.
Yeah, Duffett. This is, you were right when you said the prequel. Like, this is what they're already laying the groundwork for. The Rothschilds of the world is, you know, when the Trump thing totally unravels and, God willing, the Democrats win in 2028, they'll be able to go and drop columns about how the bad ones were the people who were a little too alarmed. The people who warned you that democracy was a threat, they were the ones that were really causing a lot of friction and tension in society, and they should be cast out. The people that did the soft fascism, that did all the things that created their unpopularity, that caused the decline of their movement, like, that wasn't the issue. Like, the issue was the people who had their hair on fire a little too hot for my taste. I'm like, that's what they're all going to do. And, you know, the only time that people opposed to Trump, people of the pro-democracy movement, are ever going to get a hint of credit from the Rothschilds of the world is like the first time that a Catholic goes into the concentration camp. Like, that's it. Not until up until that moment, we always were just a little too hot, just a little too hot. That's the problem. I'm just going to judge your rhetoric. We're not going to judge the actions of the other side too harshly. We're going to focus on the rhetoric of the people that oppose the actions. That's just, so you just got to deal with that. That's why you need yoga and therapy and deep breaths. You know, so it's not, that's going to happen.
It's not just about that, though. Like, it is, these people are constructing arguments in order to try to stop reform and accountability should they lose. Point. Like, it isn't just about, like, Ross isn't just trying to position himself. He is setting up lines of defense to say, no, there shouldn't be accountability. No, you shouldn't make Washington, D.C. a state. How dare you? That's terrible. Look at
everything works.
You know, the problems of liberal, everything all worked. You don't need to do anything. Yeah. You know, I gave my 6-year-old a gun yesterday and, you know, he didn't kill himself or anyone else. So giving 6-year-old guns is cool. Yeah. Like, there's no problem with it. I would like to bring us down a little bit, though.
Change of pace.
Sorry. Magyar's party, Tisza, won 52-54% of the vote. They only get to the magnified 66%, I think, of parliamentary seats because of the weird-ass rules that Fidesz and Orban put in. So this is, for instance, I went deep on this today. One of the things they did when they were trying to disassemble the liberal order and the democratic order was so it's a multi-party state's parliamentary system. They used to do two rounds of elections. And the idea was in the first round, you know, you have all the parties running together. and you would get the ruling party would finish at the top, and then you'd have a muddle of the opposition parties. And then in the second round, you'd wind up with coordination. So all the opposition people would then coalesce around the one. And so one of the things that Orban and Fidesz did was they said, no, all elections are going to be in a single round, which makes it very, very hard for opposition parties to coordinate with one another. Another thing they did was they did a sort of winner take all plus, in which they tried to magnify majorities. So in 2014, the Fidesz party, Orban's party, only got a plurality of the vote. They finished with, I think it was 42% of the vote, and yet they wound up with 68% of the seats in parliament. That's crazy, right? I mean, this wow. is because again, you win with a bare plurality, but then you control a supermajority that allows you to amend the constitution at your will on party line votes.
It's basically like gerrymandering here, where like you could, if you but gerrymandered.
More. He also gerrymandered. They also did gerrymandering on top of that. What it is, it's saying that if you, you know, within parliament, you get, it's like superdelegates. You know, if you get 48% of the vote and that's a plurality, we give you extra parliamentary seats. So absent that magnified system, Magyar would not have the power to go in and begin reforming the Hungarian constitution. We don't have that sort of thing here. It is very, very hard to imagine a Democratic candidate winning a presidential election with more than 53% of the vote, I think. Even 54% of the vote seems like almost unthinkable. And so the margins that any Democratic opposition will be working with here in America will be much, much smaller than they have over there. The resistance to change in terms of the institutions, much, much larger. I mean, again, just looking forward, like even if we turn back this authoritarian attempt, do we really think that there exists the political power or will to try to reform the systems that can't happen again?
I do. So I do.
Tell
this
me
is
more.
I'm just going to take the happier side of this and say Shocker. It is not at all unimaginable that this hot war extends inflation. We go into a recession. The Republicans get wiped out in 2026. The best they've got going into 2028 is the J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Tucker Carlson triumvirate of doom. And Democrats have a wide open, insane primary that sharpens everybody up and gets them into fighting shape. And they win. And here's what the thing is. Even if you take, let's say they get like 54%.
President okay? Platt. So,
hold on. but let's say they get to 54%. One of the ways in which it can still be a blowout is if they win all the blue wall states plus Nevada plus Arizona, and they pick up a place like North Carolina or some place that Dems haven't been winning. Maybe it's Iowa, right? Because the farmers have been devastated in that state by the tariffs. Let's just, you know, Obama won Iowa. It wasn't so long ago. And even though Florida, they, you know, Republicans hold on to Florida, but by 2 points, you know, like something like that. Trump flew into office this time around claiming a mandate, with much less than that. And I think that a Democrat can come in and claim that mandate. And I also think that the demand from a Democrat to do something immediately to do, like, there's a lot of people writing books right now about what are we going to do? How are we going to wield power? What changes are we going to make? They have, I'm not saying Democrats are going to be perfect, but they will have learned at least a few lessons. We haven't talked about Swalwell or because like, I'm not learning all
next.
The lessons here, but I that would be my optimistic take.
Yeah, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the potential reforms
sure.
if Trump ever gets pushed aside. I think this is why it's critical to absolutely humiliate them and snuff them out, though.
Yes.
Right. I think it is more likely, this is all hard work and going to be a stretch and event dependent, and tactics need to be smart, strategy needs to be smart, all of that. But they, I think probably a more likely way to get to an outcome that you're looking for, JVL, is not the idea that a Democrat wins 58% of the vote in the election, but that a Democrat wins by enough and that the Republicans are humiliated by enough that they go through a period where they like at least try to move away from this. And that might not work. And then again, and then eventually you're going to have to deal with this. All the flaws in the system will still be there. And the Democrats can do some things around the margins, you know, to safeguard against a few of the tactics that they used. You know, there's no like magic amulet that prevents you from a future Trump trying another attempt at this, but like weakening them so much that there is like some kind of internal reckoning, and not an internal reckoning based on like the scales falling from everybody's eyes and them becoming good, but internal reckoning based on the fact that like, no, this has been rejected so forcefully that we need that other strong voices are going to emerge to offer a counter. And maybe those voices lose again in the Republican side. And I don't fucking know. Tucker becomes the nominee. Candace becomes the nominee. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but like that is why the scale of the defeat matters. It's why.
Totally.
I always come back to this. It's why I was like sad the morning after Biden, that morning after the Biden election. Same. That's why I was sad, because I knew that it wasn't over. And so like that part of it is like forcing them to change is like as achievable or maybe even a little more than like dealing with the 300-year-old sclerotic fucking democracy that we have that is also going to have to take reforms. But to your point, like it's going to be very challenging.
And is also just to say one more note, which is this is where you're going to find Republicans, not just in the wilderness, but without the leader that they have built a cult around for so long. Like they really could be at each other's throats without any kind of cohesion. I mean, the level of diminishing of any core beyond Trump in that party. Like, what do they have? What do they stand for? Who are they?
All right. We're going to talk about Swallow in a sec, but we're going to do one last ad. Tim?
You know, being at Coachella does make you think about your wardrobe a little bit. And in middle age, you can't compete. You know, there's no point in trying to compete. You look ridiculous if you try to compete. But what you can do is ensure that you have some cool looking basics. Cool looking basics never go out of style. You can do cool looking basics at Coachella. You can do cool looking basics at the diner that JVL goes to in New Jersey. Either place, it works. And one place to get cool looking basics is from our friends at Quince. Quince makes high quality everyday essentials using premium materials like 100% European linen and their insanely soft flow knit activewear fabric. The men's linen pants and shirts are lightweight, breathable, comfortable, basically the perfect layer for spring. The best part is their prices are 50 to 60% less than similar brands because Quince cuts out the middleman. So you're paying for quality, not brand markup. I've already tried the linen shirt, the white linen shirt, as mentioned. It is beautiful for April weather here in New Orleans. It's a little, the weather, the warmth is coming a little later to Sarah and JVL in the Northeast. So they can order their linen shirts now. And by the time they come, it'll look good and it'll be linen shirt weather up there in the Northeast. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/thebulwark for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. Go to quince.com/thebulwark for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thebulwark.
So Eric Swalwell, he gone. This is, I don't claim any special. I will claim it. From the moment I first saw that guy in 2020, I just thought, no, something's wrong. That no. Remember him?
So
up
you
on
judged
the stage,
a book by its cover.
No, I judged the way he like hectored Joe by like, turn over the torch, old man. And like everything about him was like Gavin Newsom, but 1,000 times worse. And like more like Gavin like has a weird, he owns his inauthenticity. And Swalwell's was like an awkward inauthenticity. And I don't know. It's just one of the things where I least surprising scandal ever. And but I don't know, like he's out. He's just out. Like he didn't linger for, you know, forever. I think as we were taping, he and Tony Gonzalez both expelled from the House or resigned from the House. They're both gone. But the Gonzalez thing took a year.
The Gonzalez thing probably wouldn't have happened if the Swalwell thing hadn't happened.
Right.
Like it was going to become politically necessary if they were going to vote to expel Swalwell that because all the Dems would vote to expel Swalwell, maybe not all of them, but most of them would have, if not all of them. And so the Republicans were then going to be up against a brick wall. So I'm sure people went to him privately and said, you've got to go. This is going to be politically untenable if this actually goes to a vote. I think there's a few things that are interesting here just politically. I do think the word you were looking for, though, is smarmy. The thing about Swalwell is he just always suffered from an overexposure on cable news. He was always, so he had a little bit of that, just a little thirst. But he was the most likely nominee. He was winning that California primary, which is an insane primary if you have been following it. Because right now in California, it's basically now that Swalwell is out, a five-way race in which the top two, because they have a jungle primary out there, and the top two right now are Republicans, Republican Steve Hilton, and then Chad Bianco, who I don't know, he's some sheriff, I guess, but they both have 14%. And this is what's crazy, is how small the margins are for each of these guys. So the top two both have 14% each. And then you get to, oh no, I'm sorry, there was five with Swalwell, who had 12%. Tom Steyer's at 11%, and Katie Porter is at 7%, with then this like enormous swath of people, like it's like 30% who are undecided. I think Katie Porter is probably not the person. I mean, there's been so much oppo on her that's come out showing her abusing staff. And so like, is Tom Steyer, is California such a big state? It's so hard to compete there. You need so much money. And the one person with so much money is Tom Steyer. He's got to get now somebody, they've got to coalesce behind one of the Democrats to get them above these Republicans, because it will go to a two-person runoff, and you need, like, you need Steyer against probably
Hilton. Is it possible that the runoff could be two Republicans who both finish at like 15 or 17%?
I don't think so anymore. I honestly, had Swalwell had this thing, like, had Swalwell done the Trump thing, right? Had this all happened?
Brazened his way through it.
And tried to brazen his way through it and talked about how the MAGA media was out to get him and the establishment was out to get him. And this is, you know, they judge it's unfair, biased. Donald Trump is the president, right? He tried to do all that, right? And try to be a victim. And I think that it was possible, right, for him to have been a spoiler in that sense. But now that he's out, I think that people will coalesce behind Steyer. Whatever. It seems like kind of just a basic rich guy Democrat. And so it is what it is. I posted 2 weeks ago now saying, like, could the Democrats find somebody actually popular to get into the California governor's race? And like,
her name was Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Eric talks to me, who was unhappy about it. So, and now 2 weeks later, he's out of the race. And it's just like, okay, well, obviously, San Jose mayor seems fine, but the tech guys all like the San Jose mayor, so that's it is too late. No, it's too late. I was joking. I was like, could Oprah just get in? So no, that's an ugly primary. His behavior is gross.
How about Jay Fav? Could Favreau?
I was calling for Yes They Dan. I went on to a Crooked Media podcast and said Dan Pfeiffer, Yes We Dan. Sorry, not Yes They Dan. Yes We Can. Yes We Dan. He might be in the top two right now. Yeah, had he listened to me, he might be in the top two.
Not crazy.
It's a shit show. It's an insane primary. Nobody's popular. So Tom Steyer's got the money to go on airs, so we'll see. But to me, the more relevant element to this is like the impact on national politics and the way that it's sucking up Ruben Gallego right now. And I just want to talk about this for a second. He gave a press conference right before we came on. Yeah. And I've been glazing Ruben quite a bit lately because he's doing the thing that I just think more Democratic politicians should do in a bunch of different areas. He talks like himself on social media. He has been extremely passionate and unapologetic about opposing this war. No mealy mouth, no weasel words, like talking about his experience as a veteran. He is willing to go talk to, you know, people outside of the, you know, basic, you know, Northeastern corridor, coastal corridor, you know, college educated liberal circles. He moved to the middle a little bit on immigration, just on kind of like the need to be more serious about border security. Like that, like it's the type of thing that if you're, you know, kind of making a Frankenstein monster of what I think a Democratic politician should be doing right now, he's been doing most of it. And so I've been praising him for it. And his reaction to all this has been awful, which is really disappointing. And I don't, you know, what you just have to call it like you see it. And I mean, he posted yesterday, I wrote this down, "I trusted someone who I believed was a friend, but it is not now clear that he is not the person I thought I knew." He said that he has a double life. And in response to a question, he said, no, he hasn't seen him have an affair. I mean, like, this is preposterous. This is ridiculous. Like, they were roommates. They went on trips together. They were tweeting each other all the time. They're drinking buddies. They went on a tour of campuses together at some point, I think. Come on. I mean, just be real. Right. Like, be real. It would be fine. I don't know what the truth is. Right. So I can't tell him exactly what to say. If this is true, I think it would be fine to say, look, I didn't know like the extent of what he's doing. That's really inappropriate. I'm really disappointed in my friend. Like, the idea that he assaulted someone or spiked their drink. If these accusations are true, like, these women deserve justice. Right. Like, whatever. You could say that. And I'm mad at my friend. To act like you didn't know that he was out there drinking and cheating on his wife is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And like, I don't know, maybe this is just something about like American Puritan culture or whatever, but it's just like, Donald Trump is a fucking president. Like, in this day and age, like, I don't think that you need to act like it's Gary Hart if you had a buddy that was cheating on his wife and that's all it was. But like, because that's obviously what was happening. And now it just feels so phony and off and wrong. And I don't know. That's just my two cents on it.
Yeah, and I think because I also watched this press conference, and he's got that deer in headlights look. You could tell this is like he's caught a real stray here. And part of it is that he was publicly defending Swalwell when this stuff first came out. And then he did, like many people who were maybe, you know, because there was, I think, a moment where everyone was like, do we still care? Like, do we still care as a country? I actually don't think that if this was a scandal about cheating on his wife that people would care. I think to our credit, to Democrats' credit, they do still care about sexual assault. And so Swalwell, as he was going down for Gallego to defend him and then kind of be like, no, I didn't know anything. And he did go on the record and say, like, I didn't know about cheating or anything. And the thing is, like, his text messages, like, there's just stuff that can come out. Like, clearly, this is what is funny about this is everybody's like, well, everyone knew. I got to say, I didn't know. I don't know. The whisper campaigns among staffers, I guess, people sort of knew who Swalwell was. And that's the thing is everybody's like, well, people knew this. And I think what they knew is that he was philandering around and maybe like sleeping with interns, sending dick pics, like doing those things. Very, very bad.
I hate the people always knew thing. It's kind of like, well, yeah, like you assumed I heard from somebody. It's like, oh, people knew. It's like, well, what did they know? You know, like he was sliding into girls' DMs and that was inappropriate. And it's like, okay, but is that a Washington Post article? How does that stuff get out? You know what I mean? Like, a lot of that is, I'd never heard anything about him roofying somebody. And again, that is just an allegation at this point. But,
right.
You know, I do think that some of this is my point. Like, what was the thing that everybody knew? The thing that everybody knew was that Eric Swalwell, not alone in Congress, was away from his family in California and in D.C. and like drinking and going to parties and, you know, hitting on young girls. Like, that's what people, younger girls, that's what people knew. And like, so Rubin obviously knew that, right? And so like, that is the part of this that is kind of like, well, okay. But
and I do think this is part of why the Swalwell thing ends up being a bigger issue. If he was just a figure in California, the way, let's say, I don't know if this is exactly right about Ken Paxton. I don't know if that's exactly the right analogy, but Swalwell very much made himself a national political figure, right? He's run for president once. He's on national television all the time. One of the reasons he was running ahead in that race is I think he just probably had really high name ID. Yeah. And so he has national Democratic brand all over him. And that is part of the reason that I think it was sort of a problem for Democrats, although they dealt with it so quickly. And that's why the Gallego thing is like, that's going to drag this out to somebody who's currently in office, who had higher office aspirations, who was on a lot of people's shortlist for 2028.
In a swing state, if not
in a swing state, that matters.
VP, would have been a likely VP person, you know, demographically, swing state, kind of person that could do that job. And so to me, it's more like, I'm more like disappointed in it. I'm like, why are you doing this right now? Like, why go, why let Eric Swalwell take you down? And maybe there's stuff that we don't know that's yet to come out, but I don't know. To me, the right answer in this case is, yeah, dude was partying in DC, but I did not know the extent of it. I'm so sorry for these women. I don't know that that, you know, I don't know that that sticks in this day and age. Maybe that still does too.
Yeah, I got to say that the Trump of it all, and there's plenty, like there's still other members of Congress. Like they did a one-for-one trade here with Gonzalez and Swalwell in a way. Like Corey Mills is still there. Corey Mills, yeah. The stuff he's been accused of is like horrible, horrible. And so like it's not like there's been a new line drawn and we're back into a place where, you know, this kind of behavior is deemed, you know, routinely unacceptable and we get rid of everybody who does this. This was like a political maneuver where they're like, you've got one out, we're going to get one out and we're going to try and call it a day. Cause there's way more people who could go down on things like this if the actual standard mattered.
Feels like the standards should matter. I don't know. Just one man's opinion.
Which standard?
That married people out constantly drinking and hitting on people who are much younger than themselves and in positions of inferior power probably aren't exhibiting good judgment and shouldn't be trusted with high office and places where good judgment is important. Again, just one man's opinion.
Just yeah, me. I mean, look, I don't even know if this is worth it. It's like, but there's sort of a distinction probably you can make between people who have messy personal lives versus people who like assault people, especially people on their own staff, you know, abuse their office. And that is happening a fair amount. And this is why the Trump stuff is, you know, I think for a lot of people, they were like, I don't know, maybe you can get away with this in this day and age because Donald Trump is the president now. And, you know, when I sort of tweeted it, Anna Paulina Luna, who was saying, because the right, of course, is all over this, right? They're all over Swalwell for it without the slightest hint of irony. And and it's like, I'm like, hey, let me introduce you to Donald Trump. And Republicans will still be like, he didn't do anything. These are all unsubstantiated claims. There's nothing right about Trump. And you're just like, what planet are you living on?
But this is really about the judgment stuff, because if Swalwell had stayed in just as a House member, it is not clear that any, I mean, when you look at the reporting on these, nothing would have happened. This would never have come out. It was because he was on track to become governor of California. And then, by the way, would have become a top tier candidate for 2028.
Yeah, it's hubris.
It's like, that's why it becomes super relevant, because like, hold on, the guy's asking for a whole lot of responsibility.
Yeah, not so the guy I go thinks relevant.
Yeah, very quickly, who will be the first publication to publish Tom Steyer 2028, ?
Nobody.
Because if he's elected governor.
You need to watch an interview.
Somebody, but that's what I'm saying. It's preposterous. Yeah. But because he'll be the governor of California, somebody will have to write that piece. Well, it may seem unlikely, but Tom Steyer. No, of course it won't be us. That's the joke, Tim. That's the joke.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I do think that the standards thing, I think this is I'm doing the JVL now. This is a very heavy topic at the end of a good show. But I think this is going to be an important discussion inside Democratic circles over the coming years, because like there is the side of this that is like, you know, no, Democrats should be, you don't want to become Trump. You stare into the abyss, it stares back at you. There's that like element to this, right? Which is real and true. And there's also a real and true element that's like, this is a competition and like the threats are real, right? And like, this is all wrapped up in the Swalwell conversation, the Plattner conversation and all of this stuff, right? Not to compare them or what they did, but you know, this judgment question. And I think that, like Democrats, Democratic voters are in this moment going to be just a little less interested in throwing people overboard on more borderline topics and whether the standards, you know, need to, you know, whether they need to follow like the highest possible standards of comportment in personal life.
Democratic
Jay Jones.
Ray J, right? This is all the same piece.
And you go back, and it goes back to Clinton. And I think that it's interesting. I think this is interesting. This is happening because there was like a, there was a reconsideration of Bill Clinton that was happening like 5 years ago. There's the big, you know, Slate podcast about him. And I started to hear Democrats in my life be like, you know, in retrospect, we should have been a little bit tougher on Clinton. And I think that that is reverberating back the other direction right now, where people are kind of like, you know, I don't know, actually, if they care about people and their policies are good and they have some questions in their personal life, why should we cut off our nose to spite our face? And I think that those two sides of that argument are going to be, that's going to be an ongoing argument on the anti-MAGA side.
I'm here to tell you that I am confident that my preferences on this will lose.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have a whole chapter in my book called Character Doesn't Count that is specifically about this issue, the way America has changed on these things. I do think, though, that Americans still want to see a certain amount of civic virtue from someone, which is why I think that people are now much more tolerant of personal foibles, right? Like, you made mistakes. If you own them and you talk about them, that's one thing. I do think that, at least for Democrats, assault still seems to be, like, the line,
It should be for Democrats.
It's not. It is not for Republicans. And this is the main point I'm trying to make is that just because Gonzalez is out, that was a tactical political move and not a moral stand. The Swalwell stuff was actually a moral stand, where they were like, "This is we're not allowing this behavior," and it is because what I was trying to get at in the book is that like people are more tolerant of this, but they still do want to see. And I think that for Trump did convey to a portion of voters who liked his performative patriotism and hyper-nationalism, they still saw him having civic virtue when he did not have, I mean, I don't think he had any civic virtue, but they saw him as having civic virtue and they were distinguishing that from personal virtue. And so I think personal virtue matters a little bit less than it used to, but like, that assault for Democrats is still a line, which is good that someone has it.
All right, guys, good show, long show. It's been great to all be back together. Hit like, hit subscribe, vote for me for my Webby, follow the channel. We'll be back soon with more probably okay news.
Maybe come see us in California.
Bye.
Go see us in California. Good luck, America.